Okay, this is probably the third time I've recorded this because the audio was not working. So hopefully this time it's working at least competently than less. I mean, I did a whole 30-minute, conversation about the movie Porky's, and none of it was recorded. It was very frustrating. So, I mean, I can't complain. It's on my cell phone, and I got a headphone, so it's not like this is really up-to-date technology or something like that, but you'd be amazed what you could do on your cell phone right now. You can do a whole lot of stuff that you probably couldn't do before. It's like I grew up with having a cell phone, I'm 46, so, cell phones today wasn't around when I was a kid. I mean, it did, but, the person who had one on TV was like, Zach Morris, or like, drug dealers, something like that, yuppies, like, in Wall Street. But hopefully this time it's going more smoothly than last. Okay, today's topic, as I said in the trailer, will be the movie Porky's. And I have to say, probably one of the coolest movies in my childhood. Let's see if I can actually look it up, because I had it on my phone. Let's see if I can look up a plot, because I should be able to do that as well at the same time. Okay, Porky's is a high school friend, Pee-wee, Tommy, Mikey, who want to lose their virginity, but when they are kicked out of a strip club after their owner, Porky's, takes their money, they plot revenge while they're trying to get back at him. They deal with another teenage, troubles, including, Pee-wee's problems. Yeah. See, I don't know if it said what year's set in. What year? Yeah, 1954. Porky's was set in 1954. Porky's is also a 1981 Canadian-American sex comedy written by and directed by Bob Clark about the escapades of teenagers in 1954, a fictional Angel Beef High School in Florida. So that's the gist of the plot. In this movie, we're going to talk about, the many, interesting characters in the movie that, he just said it was fictional, so there might be based on, loosely based on certain people, like an amalgamation, like, kind of like in the movie, Malcolm X, where Spike Lee's character was an amalgamation of many characters. He was like, Part of it was Red Fox, Fred Sanford from the Fred Sanford TV show, stand-up comedian from the early 70s. Very funny dude. I mean, he was best friends with Malcolm X when he was a young man. I mean, I didn't even know that till later. But like those kind of amalgamations. And also going to talk about, the dealing with racism in this movie. As well as, a lot of stuff in this movie that probably would not fly now. I mean, this movie has, I guess Kim Cattrall, the only one who's, a person who had, a vast, large career amongst the other people. I don't think anyone else really did anything of any significance that I can see, It's kind of interesting that Kim Cattrall and Dan Monahan, who played Pee-wee, roughly the same age. Matter of fact, the guy who played Meat is actually younger than them. But, in the movie, it's like, they're portraying as adults, Pee-wee's supposed to be in, I'm assuming, 10th grade or 11th grade. I'm not sure how old he was supposed to be. But Kim Cattrall was supposed to be the coach. So, this is kind of an interesting thing. Let me look at Kate Hunter. She's 65 too. Wow. A lot of these people, they were born and the era this movie was supposed to be set in. But, they're much older now. I don't know if the guy who played Porky, he died in 1992 in Los Angeles, California. There's pictures of him online where he's like playing guitar and stuff. Yeah, I guess he lost some weight or something. But yeah, it's set in like kind of a coming of age story of, you know, a young man like Pee-wee. I want to keep saying Pee-wee Herman, but it's not Pee-wee Herman. A young man named Pee-wee who throughout the movie is constantly trying to lose his virginity and fails miserably. I mean, the most creepiest ways. I mean, it's a moment in the movie where they hire a prostitute or whatever, and they get into an abandoned building, an abandoned house, whatever. And, you know, everyone's getting butt naked. I mean, it's very creepy. I don't know why. I mean, I guess you don't care about venereal diseases back then. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy in itself. But also, it's like, you know, there's stories in there where they actually climb into, you know, where the showers are, which I don't know why. I don't know why anyone would take a shower in school. That's ridiculous. You know, I mean, how dirty are you? That doesn't even make any sense. But I guess it's a different time. I mean, you're not even in there for 8 hours, so I don't know why you, in God's name, wouldn't need to take a shower. But it is what it is. It's weird. You know, and throughout the movies, it's been three movies. I mean, there's Porky's. I think one's called Porky's Next Day and Porky's Revenge. Porky's Revenge is the third one. It's not as good, but no, they're all watchable. But Porky's is the best one. And it really deals with, you know, deals with the race as a part of it. Preferably the one Jewish kid gets bullied by the kind of like redneck kid. Brian Schwartz is the character's name. I don't think he's actually Jewish. Let's see what his nationality is. He is an actor, still presently acting to this day in his life and career. Yeah, he was born in Brooklyn, New York, September 19, 1952. His father, Harry, is a jazz agent manager, school teacher. His mother, Lee, is a stage actress. While in grade school, him and his family moved to Brooklyn. Los Angeles, attended Beverly Hills High. You know, it doesn't really say anything about him. Well, he's an actor, so, I mean, you play different roles. It's not like you are that person because you're playing the character. I mean, Lou Diamond Phillips played La Bamba. He's not Mexican, so. But, what was that? I lost my train of thought. It was that problem, you know, when it's like, you know, accepted ignorance and stupidity, like, he was getting bullied by this guy. It was part of their friends. And he was a huge redneck. And he called kind of racial slurs and stuff like that. I mean, he ended up whipping his ass at one point in the movie. But, you know. But the problem was not him. It was a problem to the fact that I think a lot of people go through who have abusive parents. They have, you know, adapting their personality, you know, unintentionally. And his personality he adapted was an abusive father who was like, you know, probably spent most of the time in prison, very abusive probably to his mother. You never see his mother in there, so I don't know where his mother's around. I don't know where he's living, if he's living on the street or something, but he's abused by his mom, I mean by his dad. And then, you know, there's one interesting about it, you know, they never addressed it though, but there's one scene in the movie, or a couple of scenes in the movie where he's smacking him around at the diner, and he has like a young girl on his motorcycle, and clearly that girl is not his daughter. So maybe should add a statutory rape in there as well, or because, you know, I'm pretty sure he's like 40 and she's like 15 or 16. She's not of legal age. There's one thing that's about the movie doesn't address. It's kind of interesting. I guess that so much other stuff that felt that was like being redundant, but he could have went to jail for that, because at that time that he pulls up and he's drinking a beer, and the cop, who's sheriff, says, you know, it's illegal to have an open container. I was like, what about that 15-year-old girl in the back of his motorcycle. I guess it's not important at the time. But, you know, that and that same thing, you know, you see in TV shows like All in the Family had the same kind of storyline. As I don't know what season it was, but they talked about the fact that, you know, Archie Bunker was also an abused child. And he probably developed that kind of bigotry and hatred that he got from his father. Because there's an episode where he gets thrown into the closet. He talks about him getting thrown in the closet and being bullied mercilessly. So, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, it's learned behavior. It's never, no one's ever born with that kind of hatred. And it does in that movie, especially in that movie, will probably get crap for being like a, you know, that kind of like 80s childish humor where, you know, all that kind of stuff. It actually is talking about social commentary. And I say it's one of the funniest movies. And probably one of the best movies that still lasts the test of time. I mean, I can go online right now and basically look up reviews on this movie. I'm going to try to do it. Okay. Porky's. The critics of Porky's. Here's one. These are old critics too. This movie says somehow reminded me of one of the most popular raunchy comedies of its time, even if it's not nearly as funny as it had seemed to. Well, I guess, you know, some jokes don't really last. Here's another one. Juvenile humor in this early teen comedy makes for a satisfying, precocious to American Pie, if you like that kind of thing. See, that's the thing right there. You know, American Pie is also a coming of age, but, you know, it's raunchy humor, but it's also a social commentary on racism. I mean, they talk about it in part two. They get more in depth in the part two, but in this movie, there's that part, you know, the father and son who's, you know, automatically obeying what his father tells him to do, even though he's not really have been in his life. And he feels, you know, he should, you know, honor and respect this guy, even though he doesn't respect him, or he doesn't care too much about his son. And he's, I guess in his mind, he's trying to, I guess, tough love in his most, you know, barbaric and ignorant ways. But that's not the way you raise a kid, you know, to teach him hate. Hate that you had dealt with. But, yeah. And, also, you know, the other social commentary, not only social commentary, but other things in the movie, you know, Beulah Ballbreaker, when I used to look back at as a kid and as growing up, I used to think she was a horrible person, but actually now she's just very strict, even though she's very over the top and absurd. But in actuality, I mean, a lot of it is, she has a right to complain because a lot of it, you know, very, you know, unprofessional people who work there. I mean, for instance, you know, the Kim Cattrall's character sniffing underwear in the bathroom or in the locker room and getting turned on was just disgusting. You know, what was wrong? She was just little boy's underwear. It smells like pee and poop. Why would you get turned on by that? Stinky ball sacks. Okay. And like, that's one of the funniest scenes in the movie where she's making out and she starts howling like a dog. And like, that one coach who talked him into doing this basically, it's on the other side of the, you know, gym, cracking up laughing. The director said at one point he puts his own voice over in it, but it still works. I mean, you never know. I mean, he has an infectious laughter too, but man, that was ridiculous. And then how about the time when Beulah Ballbreaker caught Tommy and was going to yank his dingling off, and then went to the office, and then they're all sitting in the office, and then Miss Ballbreaker is trying to explain to the principal that it would be in his best interest, you know, to have these young boys and with their basically their blindfolds covered, and will check their private parts. Now, what kind of nonsense is that? I don't. What are you doing? That's foolishness. I don't know why you would think that would be an okay thing and an appropriate thing to do. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking, what she was thinking. I mean, that's, you know, abuse in itself, and probably everyone who had, you know, basically, you know, proceeded in that kind of, you know, what she was doing would probably be fired. It's the most ridiculous nonsense I've ever heard. I mean, I don't know what she did. But anyway. The coach who has sex with Kim Cattrall's character basically makes a joke. He basically goes into a riff and saying, you know, I have an idea. You can have please make a sketch artist, and, you know, he can basically, Miss Ballbreaker, get a prescription. I was like, have you seen this prick? You know, please, you know, contact Beulah Ballbreaker. Even the other coaches in the room are laughing at her. This is absurd. She's trying to be stern. It's like, you know how silly this sounds when everyone's laughing at you? This is not taken seriously. But the best part is the end, when he goes, you know, if you don't operate his prick, don't operate his prick, his arms are dangerous. He's seen hanging out with a girl's locker room. He's talking about a dick. A dangerous penis. And even the principal busts out laughing. I can't take it. This nonsense. But this is a great coming-of-age movie. And then back to the people trying to lose virginity. You know, they tried it the first time at the house, and, you know, Pee-wee took off running, and they got stopped by the police. But then they went to Porky's, this, like, sketchy, you know, houseboats or whatever, and sit out in the Everglades or whatever. Ran by this big redneck named Porky's, who was probably beat the crap out of him. And, like, this is the most sketchiest thing. And then, like, everyone pays them $15, and they're going to go hopefully get laid by some prostitute. And then, like, that's sketchy. So they send him up into the room, you know. They pull a lever, and they fall into the moat, or the lake, whatever. And then they're climbing out, and then the sheriff shows up, and sheriff's also, you know, Porky's brother. You find out later, he's Porky's brother. But yeah, and it basically, he finds them all money, and they beat, you know, his the car up, and they go home, you know, with their tail between the legs, you know. I mean, the alternative is they could have been killed, because Porky's not shady dude. And he's probably done this on a regular basis. I beat the shit out of a whole lot of people. So this is not the first time this has ever happened. So, but they're young men, and you're young, you're dumb. You don't realize how much danger you're putting yourself into. And let's be honest, ain't no booty worth no ass whooping. Sorry. Now, nothing is worth a beating that you don't need to have to take. But they, you know, the blonde-headed kid, I can't think of his name. I don't even know, because all these photos are old. So I don't know his name in the movie. I forget his name, but he's basically the other redneck kid in the movie. And he is upset to the fact that he's not, you know, getting to sleep with the girl. Hoping he'd get, you know, get that prostitute, whatever. So he goes back and tries it again. Only, you know, Porky's, you know, not waiting for him, but he just beats the crap out of him. And he constantly doesn't learn his lesson. I mean, he keeps going back and back and back and forth. And, like, at some point, Porky's gonna get fed up, he's gonna kill his dude. I mean, the third time, he ends up going there, and he basically gets, you know, his chest caved in, and, like, you know, he has a collapsed lung. And then his brother's like, I can't take this no more, because they put up with this dude for years. And he's probably abused tons of people. And so they had a, you know, advise the plan. So basically what they do is they go in and they set them up, and they have the platform or whatever it is connected to the houseboat or whatever. It's not a It's not a gambling thing. I don't know what you call it. Some big boat. And they get tossed into the water. And they already have it planned out already. They had all the whole entire plan. Even the redneck dude who beat up the Jewish dude, they kind of mended ways. And they became friends and all that kind of stuff. You know, he saw the error ways and apologized. And they became friends. So they helped each other out. So basically, they just plan now to get back at Porky's. So they tear apart the bridge he was sitting on, and they fall into the water. And then they get into their cars, and they take off, and they ride down the road. So they get into the state lines. And I don't know if any of this is true, to be honest, at all. But they cross the state lines, and basically, you know, Porky's brother has no jurisdiction this side. So now it's the sheriff's turn to turn the tables. So he tears up his car and everything like that, and he tells them to go between the legs, and they leave. And, you know, basically the movies, you know, they get, Porky gets his comeuppance, and then he's in that movie, gets his comeuppance. So, you know, goes back and with his tail between his legs, and it was a big parade and all, having a good time, and then finally to beat Porky's. Porky. And at the end, Pee Wee gets slayed, he loses virginity. That's a little creepy. That's a little creepy because it happens on the, in the school bus, whatever. But anyway, when people say this movie, you know, it's kind of like something that knows out of it, but it's to me, it's that movie that is, it stands the test of time because racism is a thing that still exists and it will continue to exist because people are bred into stupidity. And this movie kind of touches on it, but to me, that to me stands away from any immature comedy alone. And I know it's a comedy, and I know it's a point to be raunchy and, you know, silly or whatever, but the movie at least tries to tell a story and try to have some social commentary. And if I don't think he meant to or not, but he talked about an interview in the audio commentary how, you know, in that time that people weren't willing to change. They're still stuck in a way. They're stuck in the past. And they're not willing to, you know, not conform, but see the error of the way, see the how their bigotry has, you know, done. So this movie, I don't think it's going to change any lives. It's not going to basically change anyone's thought process and, you know, make them see the error of the ways. But at least this movie is, like, in for that time period in the 80s, there was a movie that at least had social commentary, or at least on that era of time. So this movie is a good movie, and I would advise anyone to watch this movie as well. You know, it had three other movies. You know, Part Two. You know, Part Two is also pretty good. Three is not as good, but you know, after the third movie, they don't do as good. But I would say this movie is worth watching. I mean, you can find any bin at Walmart or whatever, you know, for $5 or something like that. I was hoping to be on Amazon Prime, but I don't think it is. But please check this movie out. This is episode 6. Hopefully, if anyone's listening to this, I appreciate you listening to this. And hopefully, I have more episodes coming up in the near future. And I will be talking about the next episode. I'm going to go back to wrestling again. And I'm going to talk more about the 80s and try to get more depth. And I'm going to try and focus on certain wrestlers. Thank you for listening. Once upon a time, there was an amazing, beautiful, wonderful woman who met an amazing guy. This happened at a grocery store that they both worked at. This grocery store, his name was Kroger's Grocery Store. And at the time, the man was working third shift. And she worked first shift. And over time, they, you know, grow closer and closer in their friendship. You know, having things in common and, you know, had a really good time. At the same time, you know, something, you know, bad happened in her life, but it was kind of frustrating. So, you know, he tried to be there for her.
And then one day, in conversation, she offered him, asked him to go out for something to eat. So needless to say, he obliged. He was really looking forward to it because he knew she was a nice, awesome person to hang out with. So the first date was at Applebee's because there was nothing really open. I think we're going to go to Harbor Inn or something, but Applebee's is open. Still remember that day, because that day he wore his long sleeve shirt. It had the Muppet Show. It's not a Muppet Show. It's a let's say Muppets. I can't even think of it as Sesame Street. Shouldn't know that. That was the shirt. It was just a magical day that day. We really got to know each other. And over time, they started going out and hanging out even more. Until one day, he decided to ask her to move in. And that's when the story begins. Even to this day, they still live happily ever after. And he is never not grateful for her being in his life. He would always love her to the day he dies, and he will continue to love her and hopefully spend a most magical, wonderful evening, a magical, wonderful life together. The end.